AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. H.W. Brands joins us. His latest book, The Zealot and the Emancipator, John Brown, Abraham Lincoln, and the Struggle for the American Freedom, is out. A very, very highly anticipated book out, and I highly recommend it. Mr. Brands, we were talking before the break about the kind of the lead up to Harper's Ferry. After Harper's Ferry, Lincoln, you know, obviously this was a major turn. I mean, it was interesting to, you know, that clearly the American people were terrified of something like this, what John Brown did at Harper's Ferry. The exaggeration of what exactly took place kind of gripped the nation. And here is Lincoln trying to put together an anti-slavery coalition, and now all of a sudden, in a very kind of in a modern political, you know, party sort of story, here he all of a sudden has a major scandal that he's being tied to, that he's trying to stay away from. And even some of the supporters that he has are applauding and thinking, okay, that we should be doing more of that. That had to be a real tough situation, and how he navigated it, I can't even imagine.
It was. So Lincoln did his best from the moment he heard of John Brown to say that John Brown is not a Republican. John Brown is not one of us. I am not John Brown. And furthermore, I am not an abolitionist. And this was really important because it might seem like a fine point from our distance. But in those days, being an abolitionist was very different from being simply opposed to slavery. And Lincoln said that although I don't like slavery, under the Constitution, I don't believe I, the President of the United States, Congress, anybody, can tamper with slavery in the states where it already exists. And just as Massachusetts had the right to say no to slavery, Mississippi has the right to say yes to slavery, as long as Mississippi wants. However, in the federal territories that are not states, that's where Congress can say no to slavery, and that's where Congress must say no to slavery. John Brown, on the other hand, was saying no to slavery everywhere. John Brown would not acknowledge the right, constitutional or otherwise, for Mississippi and Virginia and Georgia to maintain slaves. He thought that the moral question outweighed any constitutional question. For Lincoln, it was the opposite. The constitutional question outweighed the personal moral question.
And it should be mentioned, as you talk about this and his desire to separate himself from John Brown, one of the things that you address directly, the idea that's put forward that Lincoln was this reluctant president that I guess I'll try to get rid of slavery. The reality is he had been anti-slavery his entire life. That is something I think a modern interpretation. I don't know if it's to downplay slavery in the South. I don't know if it was trying to do the blue-gray brothers in arms sort of thing. But the reality is he was never really kind of reluctant. He wanted to get rid of slavery.
Well, he wanted to get rid of slavery, but again, he didn't think he had the authority to do it. And one of the sources of the confusion that you identify, and it's definitely there, is that when fighting began between the United States, the Union, and the Confederate States, the seceded South, Lincoln made a point of saying, this is not about slavery. This is simply about the Union. It's about my rejection of the interpretation of states' rights that says that states can leave the Union. No, you can't. And for a year and a half into the war, Lincoln stoutly took the position, this is not about slavery. This is about states' rights, or more precisely, the absence of a state's right to leave the Union. And so later, Southerners, defenders of the so-called lost cause, would say, no, no, the Civil War wasn't about slavery. It was about states' rights. And they could quote Abraham Lincoln in support of their position. And that was indeed Lincoln's position. It's one of the things also that so frustrated opponents of slavery, including Frederick Douglass, a former slave, a very articulate and very visible abolitionist, who, for my literary purposes, is kind of the link between John Brown and Abraham Lincoln. Brown and Lincoln never met, but Frederick Douglass knew both of them. And Douglass thought that Brown was going too far. And so, in fact, Brown invited Douglass to join him on the Harper's Ferry raid. And Douglass said, no, no, no. First of all, Douglass said, I'm a writer, not a fighter. But secondly, he realized that it was a suicide mission, that no slave in his right mind was going to join this John Brown on what was a lost cause. They'd all get killed. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. So Douglass thought that Brown was going too fast, too far. He thought that Lincoln was going too slowly and not far enough. And so he kept pushing Lincoln after the Civil War began to say, look, this is really a war about slavery. You know it's about And so you need to bite the bullet and say, this is a war about slavery. And finally, Lincoln came on board and with the Emancipation Proclamation made it a war about slavery.
A hypothetical question for you. Would Lincoln have been able to succeed at getting the presidency if not for John Brown? Because John Brown, it kind of allowed Lincoln to sell himself as a moderate. You know, that, oh, that's the extremist side. We're not there. We're just for, we're against slavery and, you know, and states' rights. Would he have become president? Would he have been successful if not for John Brown?
I think he would have, because Lincoln understood something that actually all sort of professional Republicans at that point understood, that the arithmetic of the Electoral College meant that whoever got the nomination of the Republican Party in 1860 was going to win the presidency. There were simply enough votes in the North and in the West that the Republican candidate would win. So the party was thinking, how can we not screw this up? And the way they could not screw it up was to nominate a moderate, particularly somebody who didn't have a long voting record to defend. The principal opponent of Lincoln, the front runner, was William Seward, who had been in Congress for a decade. And he had lots of votes on slavery issues to defend. And he had made lots of speeches that he had said some things that worried folks that said, oh, my gosh, this guy is too extreme. What the Republicans needed in 1860 was a safe candidate. And Abraham Lincoln was going to be that safe candidate almost regardless of whether there was a John Brown or not.
Very reminiscent of 2008. I mean, the Republicans then had no idea how to run against Barack Obama because he really didn't. So they went after him being a community organizer, which was, you know, a pretty garbage attack at the time. But, you know, once again, you had a guy that didn't have a massive record. So how do you attack a record that doesn't really exist?
Yeah. And the election of 1860 was fought out on straight sectional lines. Lincoln wasn't on the ballot in the southern states. He didn't get a single electoral vote from a southern state. He was elected with a substantial majority of the electoral vote, but with a distinct minority of the popular vote. He only had 39% of the popular vote. So although he became president of the United States, southerners could say, he's not our president. Nobody around here voted for him. And then when 11 of the southern states seceded, they say, see, he's not our president anymore at all.
You talked about earlier in the interview about putting this to your classes, the moral dilemma of what do you do when basically you're faced with an unignorable moral dilemma that you can't just ignore, you can't just walk away from. And I think one of the things that I reading an earlier interview that you had done, you brought up Vietnam, you brought up George Floyd. And you know, it's, I think that this is a great way to put what was going on at that time into perspective, is that you have to look at the fact that, you know, yeah, African-Americans have a very legitimate reason in this country today, taking George Floyd, which of course in Minneapolis here, we have, you know, had a front row seat for what happened. The African-American population can no longer just sit by as police officers kill African-American men. And so the frustration, you can see, you can understand why they're frustrated. At the same time, most people can condemn the violence and not feel if that's the right path. On the other side, you can't deny the fact that we've had decades of people saying, well, we'll solve this problem politically, and it's just not working. I think that that's when you can do that with history and what you've done with this book, I think that's so important because it makes it relatable in that you can put it onto today's kind of arguments of whatever's going on and realize, oh, this was somewhat similar to what the force of the decision they had to make back then.
Yeah, that part's true enough. It's important to keep in mind, first of all, that things that happened in the past are never so close to what's going on today that they'll give us direct instruction as what to do. But secondly, the history is full of ironies. And the big irony in the story that I write is that John Brown, who had openly embraced violence and was trying to start a war to end slavery, failed utterly to start that war. And none of the slaves in the vicinity of Harper's Ferry joined him, and it just fizzled. And he was captured, tried, and executed. Abraham Lincoln, who did his best to avoid a war over slavery, was the one who wound up leading the country through the biggest war in its history over slavery. Mm-hmm. So there's no way of telling ahead of time how these things are going to turn out.
This book is so wonderfully researched. How much time, I mean, how many years were you working on this book? Because you've got access to a lot of letters here.
Yeah. So it's a hard question to answer precisely because, as I mentioned earlier, I teach American history. So I've been teaching the story of John Brown and Abraham Lincoln for 35 years. And so I knew most of the story. The question is, what particular perspective am I going to take on these two individuals? And how am I going to get inside their heads? How am I going to employ their voices? And that's where the letters come in. I'd known about the Lincoln letters. They're one of the most famous collection of letters in American history. The John Brown letters are less well known. But he turns out to be a remarkably articulate, forceful individual in his letters. And one of the hard things for me to figure out and then to convey to readers was, what was the source of this guy's charisma, his magnetism? People were drawn to him. Even people who disagreed with him fundamentally on the issues had to admire his sincerity, his conviction.
The Zealot and the Emancipator, John Brown, Abraham Lincoln, and the Struggle for American Freedom. H.W. Brands, this is an exceptional book. My highest recommendation on this. Sir, by all means, anytime you have another book coming on out, it would be an absolute privilege to have you back on the air.
Thanks, Matt. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. H.W. Brands joining us, The Zealot and the Emancipator. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Making out with the